What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. We're smoking weed. We're talking mixed martial arts. This is Ep 133. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, Carlos Lozoya returns to the show to discuss his last two victories. And then we're going to take a deep dive with Carlos into the upcoming UFC 274 and get his thoughts on all that action. Plus, we bring back the boxing breakdown to discuss some of the incredible fights we've seen there and some exciting upcoming ones as well. But you know what happens now. Before we get to the combat sports, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
All right, so this week we have Alien Moon Pie. Interesting one.
This is an interesting one. It's got some interesting terpenes in here. What are we looking at for terpenes today on this alien?
So we got a lot of myrcene in this one, so we might be taking a nap after the show. that's pretty sporty, little 20% THC, you know. Nothing too crazy, but a good solid percentage there.
I like it. It's pretty flavorful. It's got interesting genetics here. Now, and it's kind of funny because last week we were talking a lot about how cherry pie comes into play in so many strains, and we're going to see that once again here. So Alien Moon Pie is a cross of Alien Moonshine, or sometimes called Aliens on Moonshine, and Black Cherry Pie. Mm-hmm. Now, Alien Moonshine is very interesting because it's a CBD-rich strain. Does this have a CBD profile on here? No, it does not. Not all of the dispensaries out here will put that on. However, if we break it down a little bit further, because Alien Moonshine is actually a strain I'm not familiar with. So that's a cross of Sour Alien, which has some sour diesel in those roots as well, one of my favorites, and White Moonshine. And then, of course, if people forget, the Black Cherry Pie is Blackberry Kush crossed with Cherry Pie. And then in case you somehow missed last week's episode, Cherry Pie is Granddaddy Purps and Durban Poison. So this makes a really interesting flavor profile, man. I'm digging it. We got a little bit of AK-47 left over from last week, too, in the bubbler. Any more thoughts on that weed, my friend?
I like it, actually. It's pretty cool.
I do, too.
It's got a little, kind of a little, this is going to sound funny because it's weed, everything tastes earthy, but it tastes like a little extra earthy. Like, I don't know, like it has a little spiciness to it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm trying to get more into the flavor profiles of weed. Some of them are really easy, like anything that has like high limonene, you know, especially when it's got the orange terpenes in there too. Like you can really taste
that citrus flavor,
the citrus stuff. But some of these others, like honestly, dude, I think a lot of it that you read on the internet is bullshit.
Yeah, just like wine. It's like the same thing. Like everyone has a ability to taste flavors with their palate, but like. Some people just go a little overboard. It's like, hey, simmer down there, guy.
Let's all get real here. Nobody's grabbing a bag of weed and then being like, I taste notes of six different kinds of berries crossed with an earthy umami flavor of mushrooms. And what is that? Some jet fuel. like, yes, there are some flavors in there without a doubt. But just like you said with the wine, I think some people's imagination gets a little
run wild.
A little carried away. But you're right, though, circling back. There's definitely some earthiness in this profile.
Yeah.
Well, whatever you're smoking on, if smoking is your thing, it doesn't have to be. But if you happen to be partaking with us at the moment, I hope it's fucking delicious and soon to be legal, if not legal, wherever you are. Exciting thing happening today, dude.
Yes, sir. We have the return of a former guest and real close friend of mine, Carlos Lozoya.
Joining us today for the second time is a professional MMA fighter now sporting a record of 7-2, currently on a 6-fight win streak across 2 divisions. Carlos Lozoya, welcome back.
What's up? What's up? How you guys doing?
Man, good, good. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And we know you're just coming off
a lot of changes in your career, and we're going to talk about those. And then we want to hear your thoughts on the upcoming UFC 274 card. However, but since the last time you were here, let's see, you changed camps and you had two huge victories, Ricky Steele, Randy Villarreal. Let's talk a little bit about that first one, since we haven't talked to you since then, against Ricky Steele.
Yeah, Ricky was a stud, man. I remember when I was fighting him, like, in the first round, I remember I grabbed him, and I was like, dude, you are strong. I remember feeling him. I was like, damn, this dude's strong. But I knew he couldn't keep up that pace, like, of strength. But, Ricky was a special athlete for sure, and he's awkward to deal with because he has, like, that karate background. Yeah, definitely probably the biggest name I've beaten was Ricky, because he was on Contender Series and Ultimate Fighter, and then fought for the LFA title. But that was a good win on me, and then I finished him with one of the dopest submissions ever.
Yeah,
the mounted triangle choke.
The submission was literally one of the as high level as it gets. Like, do you feel like that whole being that having that jiu-jitsu background like that was the difference for you in that fight, because you did stand with him for a little bit and you took into that deep water? Do you feel like you just were overall better when it came to the ground?
I think, you know, because I've always had like great jiu-jitsu, and there's a lot of guys that have great jiu-jitsu that don't do great at jiu-jitsu in MMA. I think I just I understand grappling and wrestling and controlling people, and I mix it in with my jiu-jitsu. But yeah, for sure, because Ricky, like, my path of victory wasn't like being on my feet with Ricky. It was taking him down, you know, and grinding him out. But yeah, I think my IQ with grappling is probably, I think it's just a different level than most people.
Mm-hmm. Well, we obviously saw that too going into the Villarreal fight, where you get another finish from dominant top position with the elbows and just real vicious in the second one. Now coming off like two finishes, like, where do you feel like that puts you? You know what I mean? Like, going forward.
I think it definitely puts me in the talk, like, of getting the UFC. So right now we're trying to work a short notice. And, but if that doesn't happen, then no matter what, I'll be fighting in like 2 months. So I'm just trying to stay active. I'm still healthy. And even if I got like a Contender Series contract or something like that, I still want to fight in 2 months and then fight on the Contender Series, or like fight in 2 months and then fight on a short notice. Whatever happens, man, that's kind of the plan, and that's kind of like the direction. Either we're like waiting for a short notice or like waiting for Contender Series. And then if neither of those happen, I'm just going to fight, because I know I'm going to kill anybody right now, especially in the regional scene. But I know when I get to the UFC, dude, I'm still going to be doing this, you know? It's still going to be the same thing. I'm going to be killing these guys.
Are you targeting 135 or 125, or either that comes up?
125 more for sure. But if it was a good fight at 135, I'd take it. But, I mean, dude, like, I got a nutritionist for 125, but I only had to cut 4 pounds of water, which was awesome. I did pounds at night. Slept off a pound, and then two pounds in the morning. After rehydration, I was like, I gained 11 pounds with an hour of just rehydrating. Felt great, man. I feel like a battery. So 125 is definitely my weight class. And then 135, I was just, I was just so busy with the military. I didn't have like the chance to diet. I didn't have the resources to do it. So I think 125 is going to be my division. But 135, if the fight makes sense, then yeah, I think I'll beat most people at 135 too. It's just it's annoying dealing with the height and reach, you know, like guys like Ricky fighting guys like that all the time. It's annoying, and it's a little bit more dangerous. But whereas like at 125, I'm fighting guys more my build, you know, like like 5'5", around that area. I'm not fighting anyone that's like 6 foot, which I've done before.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple times.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude.
Well, another thing that's changed since your last visit on the show is that you moved out to Boston and you're training with Joe Lozon at Lozon MMA, correct?
Oh yeah.
How's that experience been so far?
It's been awesome, man. Like, I've gotten to train with some really good people. Like training with Joe. Joe has like good insight because he's like had a million fights in the UFC, and then getting to train with the cartel out here with Rob Font and Cater. I've only done it a couple times, but it's not as much that like I've learned like a bunch of like new techniques. It just kind of reaffirmed my level, you know, of like where I am with my striking, where I am with my grappling. And I know I'm a grappler, but I stand up with these guys. Like I do good with everybody. So it just kind of reaffirmed everything and put more confidence in me, man. And but it's great because these guys are just it's a cool little community out here, like out in New England. Like everyone kind of trains, cross trains with everybody. And then we all want to help each other make it, you know? So I find that there's a lot more fighters around my weight around here that I can train with versus Washington, where it was like I had good grapplers like Aston Dofron, who like he's a savage on the mats, but he wasn't an MMA guy I would get to train with. I had Joey Elzea out there. I mean, I'd be able to train with Terrence, but like once in a blue moon, he was across the state. And then, you know, I had like limits of how far he could go because of the military. But dude, it's been awesome out here, man. And then dialing in my strength conditioning out here too. I go to the same strength and conditioning as Joe and Rob Font. And then getting a nutritionist, man, I'm just, it feels like I'm doing things finally right, you know? So it's, yeah. It definitely is taking me to the next level with my physique, and then just kind of reaffirmed my confidence, you know, in my abilities.
So with that being said, do you feel like that's like a big part of why the weight cut was so easy? It was like you're really, you know, the classic sayings, iron sharpens iron. And plus, you know, you got all these guys who are natural bantamweights anyways, you know what I mean? So guys like you were talking about with Font and even Lozon has been at 45, all the different weight classes he's been at. And so do you feel like that's like really changed your game in like a mental aspect more than anything? Or is it just like you were saying, you're not really learning as much as far as you know, like a lot of that. But do you think that's changed your mental game training with those guys who are like a top of the food chain?
Yeah, it's like I once saw an interview with someone that trained with Manny Pacquiao, right? And then he said there's nothing special that these guys are doing at the highest level, and but what's special is the work ethic that these guys put in. So like before sparring Manny Pacquiao, he would hit mitts, right? And then he would spar, and then most people would only spar, right? And then after sparring, you'd get on the bag and do intense bag work, right? So it's not taking shortcuts is really what I've found out here. Not taking shortcuts and doing things right, because that's the biggest thing I'm doing now versus Washington, is that I'm doing things way more with like a purpose, you know. I'm doing things like I have a schedule, and I know when I'm slacking off, you know. And I don't, but it's like they Joe and like all these other guys, they put the blueprint of what you need to do to be at the highest level, you know, and all you got to do is follow it. It's real simple, you know. But that's definitely been a big reason why I've been getting better and stronger out here, for sure.
Well, speaking of Joe, so let's kind of transition into this weekend. So there's a big card coming up with the UFC, UFC 274. Joe, as he's fighting Donald Cerrone, which is just a hell of a classic matchup, you know what I mean? Two guys who have just been around the game forever. Training with Joe and being in that camp while he's getting ready for this, like what have you seen on your side of things?
Man, he's it's so crazy. Joe, like, and it's probably because he's had a million fights. Dude, the guy feels no pressure. Like he just keeps doing what he's doing, and I think he's gonna do so good, man. I think he's gonna do really good. Joe's he's a great grappler, man, and he's deceivingly extremely strong. Like that guy, Joe, is very, very strong guy, and he has a very awkward style. When, like, you grapple with him, he has a very awkward style to deal with, and he's a finisher, man, and I think he can definitely finish Cerrone. So, watching him go through his camp, it's almost literally like another day. I mean, he's always at the gym anyways, and he's always, like, training, and I just see the composure in him, man. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, naturally, you being from that gym, you're gonna you're rooting for him. But when you're in his camp, is he the one, like, leading everything because it is his school, or is it kind of just everybody's just, like, doing their own thing?
In his camp, I mean, Joe still has coaches. I feel like Joe kind of he leads his own grappling because it's his school. But he has striking coaches. He has, like, he has a couple of striking coaches, Jake Manini, and a boxing coach. I forgot his name, Steve Mays, and they definitely help him a lot, right? With with strategy. Even though Joe's, like, more of a grappler, they help him a lot with strategy and fighting. And really smart guys, honestly. Really smart guys, but. They help him a lot with his striking, and Joe kind of leads the grappling for his own camp. But you know, every once in a while, me and Joe will kind of, like, bounce ideas off of each other for grappling. I'll be like, "Hey, I think this is cool," and be like, "Oh yeah, I like it doing like this." So, you know, he's it's not that he's not open to new ideas. It's just he knows his path to success. You know, and, and he's just high level already. So.
Well, that's a banger that starts off the main card.
Yeah, so. And real quick, I mean, I know you're obviously picking Joe to win here, but I'm curious as to how you think he gets to victory. Are you seeing a sub? Are you seeing a decision? Or you think it's going to go to strikes
and win? I think he'll TKO Cerrone, because Joe has, like, some really good like pins. He pins people's arms away from your head. He does it really, really well, and he's vicious. Dude, man, he's like, he goes in there to, like, not submit you. He goes in there to hurt you. And I think he can submit, I think he could submit Cerrone also, but I can definitely see him breaking Cerrone with ground and pound and finishing him, because he has some crafty stuff, man. He's very crafty. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure Cerrone does too, but Joe's a very good pinner. He pins people's arms away from their face. He does really well.
But not a position you want to be in with him on top of you, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, you don't want him on top of you. He's like a water bug when he's on top of you. He, like, floats over your legs and just gets into a dominant position. He's really good at it. Yeah.
Well, and that's what's crazy about Joe's career, like, as a whole, because, like, if you look at so many different names and so many different people he's fought, like, it's crazy to think, even him and Cerrone, that they're still even doing it to this day. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are freaking pioneers of the sport when you really look at it. But yeah, I'm going with Joe as well. I see a situation where possibly I think it's going to be a decision, in my opinion, just because both guys are so game. You know what I mean? Naturally, I got Joe as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking this might be, I mean, I don't know where Cerrone's contract is, but I mean, he's getting up there. I don't know how long he keeps doing it, because I see him losing here too. I'm just curious if this might be his retirement fight or if he's going to keep sticking around a while.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he could probably say that about Joe, too, because he's definitely – and he knows it. He's, like, at the end of his career. And, I mean, he's set off. He's, like, good to do whatever he wants, you know. And he just does this because he loves it, you know. But who knows?
That's what I love about both guys.
Oh, yeah, I know. They're both set off. They're okay. Mm-hmm. They don't need a fight. And, yeah, he definitely loves fighting, man. Because it's pretty rare that I don't see him in the gym, you know. And he has a passion about it. So,
well, let's talk about your thoughts on some of these other fights, because this is a pretty sick UFC card. I mean, we've got double title fights. We've got Chandler versus Ferguson. Mm-hmm. We got OSP versus Shogun. What are your thoughts, like, out of the main card, like? Between the Oliveira Gaethje and the Chandler Ferguson and the women's title fight, Namajunas Esparza, what's your favorite out of those three?
Oh my God. I love the Chandler and Ferguson fight, and I love the Oliveira and Gaethje fight. I think I'm leaning more towards loving the Gaethje and Oliveira fight, just because I copy a lot of things from Oliveira for his like striking to grappling scenarios, and man, he's so technical, man. I love watching him, man. He's just like water. He flows so good. I'm super excited about that fight. And then I think Tony is a perfect person to fight Chandler. And I think Tony, that's a bad matchup for Chandler. Honestly, I know he's been on a bad skid, but I think that's a tailor-made fight for Tony. But
really,
it seems the betting people agree with you too. They've got Tony at a -410 and Chandler at a +310. I was looking at it today. I was like, wow, I did not see that coming. Because, I mean, Tony's had, you know, kind of a strange little skid there. But, like, Chandler, too, if you really look at it. I mean, like, Chandler came in with the splash, but then the last two fights, although they've been extremely exciting, extremely close, I mean, you kind of have to look at his UFC career right here and right now, and this is a huge pivotal fight for him, if you really think of it. Yeah. You know, like, not only is Tony Ferguson a huge fight, but if he loses to Ferguson, Gaethje, and Oliveira, all three back-to-back-to-back-to-back, like, what I don't really know what that does for him in this division anymore, you know, like that kind of puts him in no man's land.
Oh yeah. I think it's a good matchup for Tony, and I'll tell you why. Because Chandler, so explosive, right? He's incredibly explosive, but Tony is so durable and awkward. I could see Chandler losing his steam in the second, and I can see Tony really starting to make like that famous Tony fight, you know. I don't see Chandler like taking down Tony and then dominating him like Oliveira. I see Tony like really making this gritty and then Chandler breaking. That's what I see with this fight, and that's why I think it's a perfect fight for Tony, just because he's so man, he's just a dog, man. Like, he's very resilient, you know. And I think it's going to play to his favor. And his conditioning is so good, man. But I like that fight, too. It's going to be exciting. I see Tony grinding it out. Decision for that one.
Yeah, that's good. That's what I'm hoping happens. Because I'd love to see Tony get right back into the title mix here with a victory. Your thoughts on that?
I agree with what you're saying, like, in that aspect. But my problem with it is I just don't know if that Tony Ferguson's there anymore, man. Like, those last two fights, although they were against, like, top dogs, like, I'm worried that, like you were saying, the explosiveness of Chandler could be a problem for Tony, in my opinion. Just because Tony does have a good way of, like, controlling the pace of the fight and everything. But, like, in his last fight, how Dariush was able to really take him down and kind of just hold him there. Like, it was worrisome for me because I'd never seen Tony Ferguson get taken down and just.
Dariush is a smart fighter. He's also a jiu-jitsu world champion and he's good grappling.
Yeah, that's true.
Chandler, not a jiu-jitsu guy. He's a wrestler.
Yeah, but
you know, so I don't see him doing the same thing that Tony is. Dariush and Oliveira, like, those two guys are very, very high level jiu-jitsu. I think the difference with it is that Chandler's just—he's just a wrestler, you know.
I like Chandler's scrambling ability, though. Watching like a lot of like his training footage with Usman and Gaethje, and like a lot of the guys that he goes and you know, gets in, like, you remember like back in the day, just that scramble drill of just like always moving on to the next spot, next thing. Yeah. He's so good at that, although he is explosive, like. I think that's going to be the difference, like, on the ground. Like, I don't think he's going to dominate Tony on the ground, but I just feel like he's going to be able to flow with him. You know what I mean?
I think he'll be able to scramble with him for one round. I think he's too explosive. And then I think his ability to scramble is going to go less and less and less. And I think Tony is going to pick up. I'm hoping. At least that's how I hope. I like Chandler, too. But, man, I love Tony. I used to love, like, his little sand technique. He'd reach down, grab some sand and throw it in the eye. It would make me laugh so much, man. Tony's just a tweak, man. You can't teach that.
Yeah, you can't teach Tony Ferguson. But, my final picks, Gonna be Chandler. You're going with Tony. Jared, yeah. Who are you
going with? Tony, just on a pure, just because I want him to win.
Yeah.
So just a fan, I'm just, please, let's see a win for Tony. What about this Oliveira Gaethje? Now, that's a really interesting matchup as well. I mean, Oliveira's looked a little susceptible to some stand-up in his last few fights in the first round, and we all know how Gaethje just fucking comes out swanging. So, your thoughts on that matchup as well?
I think it's dangerous. It's a dangerous fight for Oliveira, but I think I see Oliveira submitting him. I see that because as soon as he gets you down, man, it's just an instant threat of you being finished. And dude, Oliveira's a good wrestler. He's a really good wrestler too. I mean, he took down Chandler. He took down Dustin multiple times. Mm-hmm. And if he could take Dustin's shots and still be there to finish him, he can take Gaethje's shots and still be there to finish him. And even when he gets hurt, man, he's smart. He's still dangerous on the feet. Like he still marches forward. He mm-hmm. keeps that no man's land space occupied, you know. He's so technically sound, you know. And Gaethje's so technically sound too, but I mean, he could get clipped too. Like he's gotten clipped, he's gotten finished, you know.
He's a wild man. He throws caution to the wind all the time. So I mean, he's one of those ones where it's like, and I do think a big part of this fight too is like, in the Khabib fight, like I feel like that fight is going to be very similar to this fight. Like it's going to be a situation where Gaethje's going to go balls to the wall on the feet. But if it goes to the ground, I just don't see a scenario where he can survive like Oliveira's like constant like answer for everything he's going to do on the ground. Because like going into the Khabib fight, everyone was like, because you know and I know, like Gaethje has wrestled some top level guys that like, you know, Burrows and so many other guys where he's wrestled them at such like a tough level. When that happened with Khabib, that was like such a red flag to me that he's just not on the same level of grappling that he once was. And I feel like that's going to be the X factor for Oliveira, because if he can survive the feat, I just don't feel like Gaethje's ground game is where it needs to be for him to be like the champion. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. No, and people don't realize wrestling MMA and then wrestling are two completely different sports. They're so 100%. Different, man. That's why you see these wrestlers getting taken down and smothered. But yeah, I agree with you. If I'm Chandler, or sorry, if I'm Oliveira, I'm mixing all these guys' names up. If I'm Oliveira, I'm definitely studying that old film of Gaethje getting controlled like that by Khabib. And yeah, Khabib's special in like that grappling department. But dude, so is Oliveira. Oliveira's. I think he can finish Gaethje, and I love Gaethje, man. And that's gonna be a good fight still. I think I could totally see Gaethje rocking Oliveira, or maybe even finishing him. But I think if it gets out of the second round, I think Oliveira wins. You know, so.
Mm-hmm.
And Oliveira's striking is much improved as well. I mean, you can hang a little bit. Like you're right, he could definitely tag Gaethje up.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I thought, you know, looking back at the Khabib fight, I really thought that was the time when we would see this. Because me, I wasn't familiar with Gaethje's wrestling outside of MMA. Like I met him in MMA, and I just heard he was a good wrestler, but we've never seen it. And I thought for sure we'd see it in the Khabib fight, and we didn't. And I just got to agree with Paul. I think it goes the same way. And he's not going to be able to stop him. He's going to get submitted.
Yeah.
But it'll be a great fucking fight.
Yeah, it's going to be a great fight. That's going to be a banger for sure. I mean, both these guys can get finished at any point. And yeah, Gaethje's just exciting to watch. He's killed so many people too, man. Mm. But yeah, you're right. He hasn't really shown that wrestling. He showed it a little bit with Chandler, but he just kind of like front flipped out of a double.
Yeah,
you know, which is like it is like a good scramble. But,
yeah, that's cool.
I don't see him really scrambling that well. He just doesn't have the jiu-jitsu, man. He literally has like white belt jiu-jitsu. Like when he's mounted, he's like holding like incorrectly. He's exposing himself. So you can definitely see where all his focus is in training. You know, he's not doing jiu-jitsu like that. He uses his wrestling to stay on his feet. And I think nobody's ever wanted to try to wrestle with him because he had those like wrestling credentials. But I think Khabib really put that like question to of like his wrestling. He put it out there.
Well, what people don't realize too is like wrestling is not something you just like you did it at one time in your life and then now you're just the greatest forever. You know what I mean? Like it's such a game of like different styles, and you know, and I know, like we've wrestled so many different people like over the time, like our lifetime. Like no two people are the same when you're talking about like actual styles and how just like the feel. You know what I mean? Like the actual feel, like when you get in there and you don't even have to do anything. Just like that first exchange of like a tie up or how their stances and stuff like that. Like it just does when you take so much time, and I don't know exactly as far as how much wrestling he's doing or not doing now, but you can tell it's a lot less than earlier in his life. You can just see in his like fighting style and his like just everyday grappling exchanges in his fights that he's not wrestling as much as he used to. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, there's the same, like you were saying. It's not, forever. No, hell no. Yeah. And that's the thing. That's like, if you're Gaethje and you saw what happened in the Khabib fight, maybe this is an opportunity for him to show everyone like, hey, that happened to me then. But since then, I've been in the gym working on that same stuff. And hopefully we see that, because if that's the case, this fight could be a knockdown, drag-out war, just like so many classic Justin Gaethje fights. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, regardless of all these outcomes of Joe and Cerrone, Gaethje and Oliveira, and then Ferguson and Chandler, regardless of the outcomes, man, they're all going to be good fights. Like,
they're all bangers.
You don't put these styles together and see a boring fight. Like, these are all good fights, man. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm. And then Rose and is it Jang? Rose and Jang are fighting?
It's Carlos Esparza.
No, Carlos Esparza.
That's right. Ooh, Carla could win that.
It's a rematch too. Carla won the first one.
Yeah, Carla's a dog too. Like, and she keeps a good pace. And then Rose is explosive, and she has conditioning, but she has like striking conditioning. And then Carla has that grappling conditioning, which are two completely different things. I think that's another banger. That's an exciting one too. Yeah, you see Carla Esparza, new champ.
Well, that's the thing, is like when you look at back in the day, that they were the ones who fought for the inaugural strawweight championship out of the Ultimate Fighter, and so she actually wrestled at Menlo with my older brother, and he said the same thing about her, that she's just like, she just grinds. Like, that was a difference even when she was in college and everything like that. She sometimes she's not the most technical, sometimes she's not the most like, you know, pretty when she's in there, but everything is just a grind. And that's what I feel like, to beat someone like Rose, is like, she's so technical that you kind of have to make it messy. You know what I mean? You got to make it a dogfight to beat someone like Rose. I feel like that's what Carla has to do here. You know, that she's obviously not going to be able to sit and stand in front of her. That's the last thing you do in front of Rose. But we're really going to be able to see where Rose's like entire game has gone. Because I feel like her last two fights, high level strikers. Now, this is like the highest of high level wrestlers in the division. So this would be a real big test for Rose, I think.
Yeah, I can see it going both ways, that fight, though. Rose is good. And, I mean, she's, like, not only technical, but she's an athlete, dude. Like, she's a special athlete at 115, man. But, like you said, you grind anybody. Like, and Carla does it naturally, you know? She grinds on people naturally, and that's what she has to do to win. So I think that's a fight more for Carla, for sure. But, never know what happens. Maybe Carla gets knocked out or finished. So we'll see.
And then also, you got to think, too, like, with Rose, where she's at mentally is a big part of the fight, too. You know what I mean?
I was just
like,
thinking the same thing.
Yeah, like, her mental game is huge for her success or downfall.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, she's either, like, off the wagon or she's on it, you know?
And when she's on it, though, she's the best fighter in the world. Like, it's crazy.
Indestructible when she's on it, you know? Like, most people, when people believe, like, they're going to, like, be a different level, you know? That's everybody. But, she's one of those people that, like, and we've met people like this where, like, they're mental cases, and you're like, man, like, if this guy just got his mentality right, he'd be a killer, you know? But she's definitely kind of like, she loses it a little bit. You see it sometimes before her fights, but And then, but I mean, she's been on a tear, beating Jang and Joanna, dude. But we'll see where she's at. It's hard when you face someone that's already beating you. There's a lot of nerves to that, and I can attest to that, because when my first win for my 2-fight loss streak was from someone who beat me, you know. And there really is like a lot of doubts in your head. You're like, man, should I be doing this? You know, this person already beat me. You know, so. I know she's probably feeling those same emotions that, you know, just like any other person would feel against someone that beat them. But yeah,
for sure. That might play this into, you know, more of a problem with Rose, because, you know, God bless her, but we're all talking about it. She is in her head a lot. And you combine that with what you just said about the prior victory. Because I think if she's got it together, I think personally she'll go out and smoke Carla. But
yeah,
I think it's a coin flip as to whether she's got it together. And if she can't, you know, if she can't keep it through the whole 5 rounds as well, and you're right, Carla will just grind her out for the victory.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, another great fight. This whole main card pay-per-view, like Paul and I kind of bitch on the show a lot about the price tag of some of these UFC cards and the fights that they're putting on there.
Yeah,
but that's not a problem this week, man. This one is killer.
This one's a banger. This one, they'll get my money.
I'm watching that at some friend's house or something.
Yeah. About to shack up. Who knows? You're paying the fight? I'll bring the case of beer. $15 or $75? I'll take the
$15. Yeah, exactly. You split it with some friends, man.
Yeah.
Well, man, we're really looking forward to hearing about, you know, your next fight announcement. And we appreciate you coming on and talking about, you know, all these fights and your time at Lazon's camp and your expert knowledge on how, you know, this card is looking and what these fighters bring to the table. It's real cool to sit and talk with you. And I'd like to make sure our fans can all know where they can find you on social media.
Oh, yeah. So I actually just made a Twitter. So you can find me, Carlos Lozoya MMA. And then same on Instagram, Carlos Lozoya MMA. Real simple. So that's where you can find me.
All right, dope. Well, we will. We're on Twitter too, so we'll make sure we follow you.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Retweet everyone that stuff out. Yeah,
everyone's got Twitter.
Yeah, I think Twitter's about to come back in, man. Twitter was been on the fade for a while, but it might get popular again.
Twitter's back.
No. Right.
Yeah, I know. I'm just getting into the tweeting, man. Too many social medias, honestly.
Dude, there's so many.
I got told I gotta make one, so I just made one.
That's good, man. Well, everybody listening, please go find Carlos there. We're gonna keep everybody in our audience updated on your next fight as well. And, you know, thank you so much for coming on.
Yep. Thanks again, brother.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. That was fun. I appreciate it, man.
We'll see you next time, man.
All right. See you next time, brother.
Dude, that was really dope having Carlos back on the show and hearing his clearly expert insight on a lot of these fights and being in Lozon's camp and everything.
Yeah, honestly, I've known Carlos my whole life, and he's a very, very like smart at breaking down styles and techniques, and it's always great and insightful getting a good conversation in like that.
Dude, you know, I think he's right about the breakout, dude. I mean, the 6-fight win streak is no joke. He's extremely talented, and this switch over, you know, like we discussed on the show, but or in the interview, the switch and being around, like you summed it up well when you said iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
It's not that he needed to necessarily learn new skills, but dude, you become who you hang out with. You know what I mean? And when you're the best guy in your prior gym, maybe, or one of the best, and then you go hang around these guys that are like world class.
About, yeah. Like, and he was talking about going to the, you know, New England Cartel, training with Calvin Kattar and Rob Font, and then obviously Joe Lozon, who's a, you know, multiple
using the same nutritionist as these guys, being able to really dial in the technical fighting skills, but the other things with your body and the mentality. It's just super dope, dude. 7 or 6-fight win streak, about to be 7 most likely.
2 finishes in a row. Contender Dana White, series. Where you at?
Where you at, Dana? Let's hope he gets that short notice, that UFC break, either the contender series, short notice, whatever.
Yep.
And let's wrap up this UFC talk with a look back at last week's event, which the card itself was kind of unimpressive, but the main event was dope. Yeah. Like we said it would be. However, I can't remember who you picked, but I know I picked Rob Font. I thought Font was going to really outclass him here.
And I think I said that I thought Font was going to win, but I wanted Cheeto to win because that's naturally how it was in my head, to be honest. Like, I like Cheeto Vera, and I'm really happy with the performance he put on because he looked fantastic.
I like Cheeto as well. I just did not think that he had that extra level. Dude, I didn't.
He's very similar to, like I know I make this comparison now with everybody who's in the UFC for a long time, but kind of like fucking Charles. We've watched him, like, become a better and better fighter in front of our eyes. You know what I mean? Like, he's had some setbacks. He's had some great fights. He's had some performances that have, like, put him on the map, and he's had some not-so-great ones. And I feel like this is one of the performances that, like, has really established himself now as a top of the food chain bantamweight and a guy that Aljamain Sterling and everyone inside that top three need to worry about.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. And for those that missed the fight, I mean, it was a decision victory, but it was very clear. I mean, yeah. He had that full beacon.
Yeah.
And well, Rob Font, in my mind, and my opinion, is a top tier
fighter. It didn't come without adversity, though. Early in the fight, Rob had a real good game plan. He was pushing the pace. He was trying to break Cheeto. But I think what happened was just sometimes when you try to break someone and they're just not breaking and then they come back at you with that same pace, it's just scary. Because, like, not scary. I'm not saying Rob was scared.
Not like frightened of them, but it's, yeah.
The mentality.
It's a mental challenge.
Yeah,
it's a good way to put it.
There's, everyone loves to say it's not there, but every sport, no matter what you're in, has momentum. And when you have momentum and it gets broken, it's devastating.
You're right.
Like, it's devastating to the psyche. It doesn't matter if you're shooting basketballs or any of that shit. You know, you see a guy go on a streak of, you know, however many three-point shots or whatever and then misses, then mentally he's like, fuck, I'm screwed. You
right.
know what I mean? Then they shoot bad for the rest of the game. That's kind of what happened with Rob. He came out and looked great early. It was like, oh, maybe this is too much for Cheeto. But then I think about, like, halfway through the second and on, it was just all Cheeto for me.
Yeah, it was a really impressive performance. Cheeto Vera showed me that he's a serious threat to the top 3-4 guys in this division.
I think, and even Aljo would be
his name gets some respect put on it. I also
he has like a cult following too. Like he'd be easy to like promote into some of these main events and stuff like that.
Yeah. Because
he's been like replacement last minute main events and people love to see him.
Dude, he's the kind of guy who reminds me of the best of George Masvidal. Mm-hmm. He kind of has that aura about him.
The Diaz brother kind of thing.
Yeah, but he hasn't like translated that to mainstream MMA yet. You know what I mean?
Culture,
like, but
though.
He could. No, he's right there. And he's my point being is he could be a guy that breaks out
into
like a slightly later in the career superstardom.
Yeah. I don't even think later in the career. I think he's like on the brink of it, like right now.
Well, I mean,
like
he's just been. It's not like
he's
compare
what,
him
29-ish, something like that.
Like compare him to like Sean O'Malley, who's had all the hype from the instant. Mm-hmm. Like he's a young dude filled with hype right from the get go. Yeah. Cheeto Vera is a grinder that not too many people outside of MMA culture were really like putting anything on him. Mm-hmm. But he's got all the ingredients I think you need to just break out and beat his guy.
Oh yeah, most definitely. You know? And like I said too, like although he's still young and he's like. Actual like UFC career, he has like 12 fights in the UFC.
Yeah, he's been in there for a while. It's weird. Yeah. He's
just, you know, like you were saying, he has that Masvidal Diaz like attitude where he just doesn't give a fuck. Win or lose, he's not gonna make any excuses. He wasn't tough enough. You know, like he's always gonna come out and be a tough motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Win or lose, you know what I mean? Like you're never gonna see him give up in there. No. I feel like that's a big part of his like. Rise in this division also because kind of back to what we were talking about before with the mentality thing, like that mentality of just like not giving a fuck in a fight matters. Like, you know what I mean? Like people can say what they want, but when guys like Connor or Nate Diaz or Nick or a lot of these guys who talk shit in the octagon, when you miss or you hit them and they go, nah, that shit didn't hurt. That makes you want to hit them so much harder. Like think about the psyche of like even although he lost to Jose Aldo, imagine being in the octagon with a guy who's an up and comer. You're Jose Aldo, one of the greatest fighters who's ever been in the UFC. And this motherfucker flips you off and tells you to fuck off in the middle of the octagon before the fight, he's talking about you're a big, you know, big reason why he wanted to fight and everything. Because he's like that. He keeps it real.
Yeah.
He gives respect. But he just, when they're in the octagon, there is no respect for anybody when it comes to fighting against a guy like a Chito Vera or like a Nader Nick or Connor or something like
exactly.
that. And that's why I feel like that's what's going to ascend him into stardom. You know what I mean?
100%, bro.
People love that shit.
Yeah, they do.
I love that shit.
I do too.
Yeah.
Shit, that's what attracts me to fucking fighting.
Yeah, because that
he's a fighter's fighter. Like, that's a dude. And, like, I'm very interested in the fact and impressed by the fact that he did call out Jose Aldo, who he lost to. I respect the fuck out of that. And he wants it in a 5-round fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it'll happen or not. But just that desire to be like, nah, that was bullshit. I can beat this guy. Right, and back. I don't even call for a title shot. I want this fucking dude who just beat me. Fuck that. I'm going to beat you. I love that shit.
Yeah. Okay. Chito Vera's got a bright future.
Chito. Yeah. I'm excited to see what's next for old boy.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of wraps up UFC and mixed martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it's time for the boxing breakdown.
Big weekend, big couple of weekends of boxing we've had these last few, huh?
It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm so happy. Like, being a former boxer, I'm excited when boxing is healthy. Like, all of us are who love fights, but you know what I mean? Like on a personal level, like, I feel bummed out when boxing's in low points. It's like, and I like MMA enough stuff, too, but my heart's always with the boxers. And so,
yeah.
What a fucking weekend, dude.
A lot of guys who I feel like could be real big, and women, they could be very big mainstream sellers as well. Like, this was an opportunity where we had two humongous, like, fights when you really look at it. Let's just, I'd say we start in Madison Square Garden, where we had the very first ever women's title bout headline a card in Madison Square Garden since it's ever been open, which is just, it's groundbreaking for both these ladies, and it comes from two women who are both not even from the United States.
Yeah, we're talking about
Puerto Rico and Ireland.
Yeah, of course, we're talking about the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano fight, the 4-belt unification.
Huge fight.
Historic for the division. And these are two women that are undeniably top tier fighters and athletes. And you don't have to stick the caveat in front of it of the top tier women's boxers. Kind of like they're like, kind of like you can make these things to say about Rose and about Valentina Shevchenko in MMA. Yeah. You know, and people like Amanda Nunes that are these established fighters that it's not just in their area. Like, these are people that they're just top-tier athletes.
Everywhere.
However you want to compare them with men or whoever else, they're top of the food chain. And it was a big moment because, also, it was a big fight. And by that, I mean people cared.
Yeah.
The gate seemed successful.
I'm telling you,
it headlined MSG. That's a
not only that, it was trending on Twitter probably for a whole maybe 10 hours after. Like, it was literally the whole day, and then going into the next morning, it was top 5 trending on Twitter. Like, that means something, you know what I mean? Like, that's big.
Well, it winds up, let's read the scores here. When it's all said and done, for all 4 belts, the scores were 96-94 for Serrano, and then 97-93 and 96-93 for Taylor. So she gets the pretty close. You know, it's a split decision. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Any way you want to slice it.
Yep.
She does get the victory. She is now the first 4-belt unified champion in that division. And there's immediate talk of a rematch.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some stats here that I find interesting here. You know, it was, like you said, it was terrific action from
the bell.
I mean, look at the last 2 minutes. I mean, what did you think of just the last 1 minute of that fight, Paul?
Yeah, it was a knockdown, drag-it-out war, for sure. Just
from the top out. But Serrano did have a 173 to 147 edge in landed punches, and that was really bolstered up by a 44 to 14 edge in round 5. So, I mean, she had a terrific round 5. These two ladies, this fight was so close and so action-filled, dude. They landed within 6 punches of each other in 8 out of 10 rounds.
Yeah, that's tough to judge. Like,
yeah.
there was a lot of people that were like, online talking about the, you know, the decision and everything, but I don't think, like, with a fight that was close like this, I don't really know. It wasn't like it was a robbery.
No, no, not at all.
It was never a robbery, but it was just like you could have had it the other way because there were so many rounds that were, like, pretty close. You know what I mean?
Serrano, you know, she wound up landing 36% of her power punches to Taylor's 47% of her power shots. And here's a final interesting statistic about this is the 173 punches that Serrano landed were the most ever landed by an opponent of Katie Taylor. And the 147 punches landed by Taylor were the most ever landed by a Serrano opponent.
Yeah.
And let's remind our listeners, you know, that it's not, it's, this isn't a point contest to the fact, like, who landed the most punches at the end of it. So it doesn't, it's irrelevant, really, as to who landed more shots, because clearly that advantage came in one single round.
Yeah.
And the round did not wind up being a 10-8 round. Mm-hmm. So one single round a fight does not make unless there's, like, multiple knockdowns or something dramatic that shifts it into 10-8 scores. Because, you know, unlike MMA, 10-8s come into play in a major way in boxing.
Yeah.
Any type of knockdown goes into a fucking 10-8. Multiple ones, they'll do fucking 10-7s.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's really inconsequential. But these high punch differentials, it is what it is. You had a great round and you won that round, but it's still a 10-9 round.
Well, and then at the end of the day, too, like, there's... when there's flurries, when there's, like, super high output like this, and there's a lot of flurry, like, a lot of trading, it really just comes down to what judges feel like who got the best of each other there. You know what I mean? And I do think the power punches, like you were talking about before, like, could have swayed them, you know? Just because close fights like this, this was not, like I said before, it wasn't a robbery. I just thought it was a real close fight, and I'm not mad Taylor won, but I thought it was really, really close.
This is one of the few times, because we fucking keep it real here. I mean, we're fans of certain people on this show, and we have our biases, and I think we try to be pretty open about those biases. And I talk a lot of shit, and so do you, frankly, about Jake Paul, the boxer. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give Jake Paul, the fledgling but now successful boxing promoter, props here.
Yeah, this was a
good one. Made an important fight happen. You were a part of an important fight happening, at least on one side.
Yeah.
And not only did it just happen, but these women got the fucking shine that they deserve that is sorely lacking in women's boxing.
Yeah.
It's not right. They don't make the same amount of money. They don't. And it's not necessarily because it's sexism, but it's because they don't draw fucking crowds. You can't pay somebody millions of dollars when nobody's ordering a fucking pay-per-view and the arena's half fucking empty.
But see, when you have fights like this that were promoted the right way, you can, everybody gets paid. You know what I mean? So, at the end of the day, it was just one of those fights that I think was groundbreaking for the division. Yeah. For the division, and it shows, like, other top-level women's boxers that, with the right promotion, they could do something just as big.
Dude, I think it's super important, and I'll give Jake Paul credit on that aspect of it. And I give all the credit in the world to both of these women athletes here.
Yeah.
Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano, thank you for putting on a fucking killer show.
Yeah.
Probably going to see a rematch here. Yeah. And I don't think anybody's mad about that. Mm-mm. No.
Be cool to see. Maybe they take it somewhere bigger and see how much they can sell it out.
They bring it here to Vegas.
Because that was a hell of a fight, too. Because, like, they could use, not only before, we saw how it did before the fight even happened, and they promoted it the right way. Now that you have a war like that, and you can promote it off of that, and use all the highlights and all this big press,
and this people could be that a didn't whole, know.
Even whole other thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Because there'll be all these people that
kudos to them,
were unaware of the fight beforehand that'll hear all this buzz afterwards. So when the rematch comes around, might be easier to sell them in on it, because that's all I want here. I don't give a flying rat's ass if Jake Paul makes any money, or Eddie Hearn for that matter. But the athletes, that's all we give a fuck about on the show, are the athletes. And we big sales should equal big paydays for these women.
Yeah, so. No doubt. Well, we also had some other boxing go down right here in Vegas. We had Shakur Stevenson take on Oscar Valdez in a unification bout. For the Super Featherweight Championship. And just what I thought was a masterclass by Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah, this is the... While equally as impressive, in different aspects, this was the opposite of the Serrano-Taylor fight.
Yeah.
This was all Shakur Stevenson. Mm. Talk about a coming out party. I mean, we all knew he was good, but this is supposed to be like a test here.
Yeah, this is supposed to be his biggest test. He passed with freaking no real adversity. I mean, don't get me wrong. Valdez, you know, he put the work in. It wasn't like he got completely washed.
No, he had moments of success.
Yeah.
In the fight. And
Stevenson was just too strong, hit him too hard. And
yeah. Stevenson was tested.
Too fast.
You know, but he winds up winning a unanimous decision with scores of 117-110, 118-109, and 118-109.
Yeah.
That's utter domination.
Yeah, and then he hits him with the slickest knockdown probably of, like, I've seen in a while. So just his footwork was ridiculous. He turned the corner so quick, he had him, like, almost tripped over. And then he hits him with an uppercut and just puts him down in the sixth. And then I thought that was just icing on the cake, you know what I mean?
That was a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Pivoting like that and throwing uppercuts is so deadly. Footwork is so important in boxing.
Because he had him on the ropes and he like bounced off and stuck. Oh, it was
just
nasty.
Gets him. I mean, he wound up outlanding Oscar Valdez 189 to 110 in total punches. Lands 53% of his power punches. And Valdez falls to 30-1. You know, this is his first defeat, and man, was it a sounding one. Yeah. And now Stevenson has really announced himself here as a fucking force to be reckoned with. He is still a young fighter.
He's like 24.
Yeah. Medalist, isn't he?
Yeah, silver medalist in the Rio Olympics.
What a performance. And who's he talking about?
Well, yeah, after the fight, he was saying that he wants to either fight the winner of Haney and George Gimbosis.
That'd be great. So he's talking about moving up. Mm-hmm. And
is his name, right? George Gimbosis?
Yeah, you're right. I love that. I love the fact that he's looking to challenge himself to the
And that's
extreme.
A division with so much talent that, like, you could, there could be so many great fights right there.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
Oh, lightweight.
This is a fighter that we need to be keeping an eye on. And if you are listening right now, if you're unfamiliar, if you don't know by now, now you know.
Yeah.
Catch this next fight. Whatever it's for, it's going to be a big one with Stevenson. Mm-hmm. And that brings us, we'll round out the show and the boxing breakdown here with a discussion about the big fight upcoming, because it's just week after week with boxing.
Yeah.
And now we've got the best in the business outside of Tyson Fury. You can go back and forth, but no doubting he's an all-time GOAT. Canelo Alvarez versus Dimitri Bivol. Oh, I'm high. For the light heavyweight title, correct?
Yeah.
So
Canelo just, you know, he's running out of options, so he's just out here trying to do the most.
Yeah, I mean, if people listening somehow were unaware of, I mean, Canelo Alvarez has unified all four major world titles. He became undisputed super middleweight champ, doing that 11th round TKO victory over Caleb Plant. This was just November 6th of last year. And, you know, we thought he was going to go all the way up to cruiserweight and fight Makabu, which was going to be crazy.
There was a couple different guys, too. He could have fought Bidabidov. He was talking about that one as well. Those would have been some very interesting fights.
Yeah, because those guys are very large.
Yeah.
I mean, but anyways, instead, it got announced on February 25th of this year that Alvarez signs a two-fight deal with Matchroom, dude. And the first fight's going to see him returning to the light heavyweight division, where he already won a title.
Yeah.
Which he vacated, correct? I'm pretty certain he dropped it.
Yeah, when he beat Kovalev.
Yeah. But he's going to be taking on a guy who's been long reigning for a while, the WBA super champion Dimitri Bivol, and I think it's a great fight, dude. This guy's had the title since 2016 with the interim, and then he was designated also a super champion in 2019. So it's technically for two titles: the WBA super title and then the world title, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know, boxing with all this shit, dude. That might be slightly incorrect. I don't know. Whatever. But he has definitely has the, I say, a slight size advantage. here. But, I mean, what do you think? I think it's going to be all Canelo. I mean, it's not like an impressive prediction here, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. But what's interesting about this, though, is Canelo already has his next fight signed as well. Yeah. He's turning around after this, and he's fighting Triple G on September 17th. So, like, I wonder, like, if any of this, like, if we're going to see a situation where Canelo just tries to get in there and just put him away quick. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I know that sounds fucked up, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I wonder, it could get him in trouble, I guess, but you know what I'm saying? Like, he could just come out here and try to make quick work at Homeboy.
Yeah, I mean, Homeboy he's undefeated. I mean, he's 19-0 with 11 KOs. He's 6 feet tall. He's got the size advantage. You know, Canelo's, you know, 5'8 on a tall day.
Yeah.
5'7 and a half, technically.
Yeah.
You know, they're both orthodox, so he's clearly given up a size advantage, but he's already proven that doesn't matter. He's Canelo Alvarez. He's going to go in there and...
Who knows, though, because when he did fight Kovalev, he was a little bit more willing to get hit. You know what I mean? Because normally, like, when he was fighting, like, middleweight, super middleweight, all the different weight classes, his defense has been a pretty big part of his game. But I thought in the Kovalev fight, he let Kovalev hit him a little bit more, tire him out, and then put him away. I wonder if he would have a very similar game plan here, or is he going to go out there and try to, you know, just gas him with his defense?
Right.
That's what Canelo's does at his best, you know. He hits you with punches you don't see coming, and then when you try to hit him, he gets out of the way and makes you look stupid.
I doubt Canelo's wanting to go 12 rounds here, though. I mean, with a fight right around the corner in September, it's not like he stays out of shape, though. This is a guy that stays in shape in between camps and clearly wants to.
I wonder what he comes
action.
In weighing in at here.
I'd be very interested in that. Boxing also gives us the fight night weights as well, so I'll be interested in hearing that, too. But. I mean, clearly, until Canelo shows us otherwise, I think it's ridiculous to pick against him. So I'm sure picking a Canelo victory here.
Yeah, always.
And honestly, I'm not as interested in the Triple G fight after Triple G's last victory. I mean, it's going to happen, but I think Canelo will put a stamp on it.
You think
then
so?
Too, because I think while Triple G still won in his last bout, he did not look himself, and he clearly looked. Like, his age is starting to catch up with him. And Canelo is clearly in his prime, possibly even getting better.
Yeah.
And we had a couple close ones before. This one will be all Canelo in September. Again, not a crazy
prediction. I tend
to
agree.
But, right.
Canelo's just on another level to me, bro. I don't see anybody who's going to beat him. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could be wrong, but you know what I'm saying? I just don't. Like, and honestly, the I thought Triple G won the first fight against Canelo, to be honest. But since then, he's just been so fucking good against so many, like, high-level talented guys that I just can't pick against him at this point anymore. I refuse.
No, me neither. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great night of action. Just because you think a fighter is going to win, it doesn't mean that it's not exciting to watch. He's a master at what he does, and it's going to be a fucking great weekend of fights, man.
Hell yeah. Well, I think that about wraps up our show for today.
It does. It's been great. I'd like to thank Carlos Lozoya once again for coming on the show.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And if you're brand new, you can find our podcast pretty much anywhere podcasts are out. And we even do video for everybody up on YouTube if you prefer to actually see my bald head and Paul's handsome face. So where can everybody find that information?
All that information is at swatmade.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, support the podcast. Or you can also head over to Instagram and follow us at SWATMMAPodcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.